Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies, back with you here for this Monday, and I'm back in Memphis safely. Thank you for your patience as we had to take a little bit of a hiatus because of my radio gig sent me up to Minneapolis for Super Bowl 52. So all week long I was up in Minneapolis and totally unable to do any kind of recording for Locked On Grizzlies, unfortunately. So thankfully for us, there was no major Grizzlies, news, no trades or anything like that. But with the trade deadline coming up on Thursday, it's time to crank it up, and we will be doing that, believe me, over the next few days. We're going to talk about the game in Toronto, where the Grizzlies put forth another spirited effort for about 36 minutes or so, and then did the right thing, went ahead and made sure that they lost. They'd been putting up very spirited efforts on the road in losses, and that's a positive thing. I think for the most part, it's kind of your ideal tanking situation that the Grizzlies have been putting out there, not actually winning these games, but coming pretty close and getting some good competitive experience for a lot of these guys. So that's a good thing. We'll talk about those games. But first, I want to talk about the more pressing situation, which is the trade deadline, and which is the trade situation for the Grizzlies. And the situation with Tyreek Evans, and I got to tell you, like, I think the Grizzlies are smart to sit Tyreek the way that they are. That's the right thing to do. It's, you know, really the only thing to do, you know, in a situation like this. You certainly don't want to get the guy hurt when you know that you're going to have to trade him. And the secondary benefit is, of course, that he doesn't get to help you win games, and considering he has been far and away the Grizzlies' best player, I mean, it's not even close in terms of net rating and impact and everything else that's out there. And considering all of that, then let's be honest. I mean, it makes perfect sense for them to sit the guy in this situation. Now, the issue that I have with it, though, is the way that it happened. And it's the same issue that, you know, players have with the whole thing. It was not handled particularly well by the Grizzlies. I've never really seen anything quite like it, where he's traveling with the team. He travels with the team. First of all, he plays on Monday night last week in a game at home against the Suns, a game that, you know, the Grizzlies really, if you're going to go ahead and start the whole tanking process, which they obviously at this point are, then that's really the best place to do it. I mean, that's a game against the Suns that if you lose that one, that's a double loss, which in this situation is a double win. Now, that's a team you're directly competing with for those tanking spots. But, you know, you go ahead and play Tyreek in that game, fine, whatever, no problem. But then he makes the trip up to Indianapolis, goes through all the pregame stuff, he's in the middle of that, he's dressed out, he's ready to go. No problem, not hurt, not listed, etc. And then he's yanked off the court like about an hour before the game and has this kind of an emotional goodbye to, you know, Marc Gasol and his teammates and all that stuff. And then, like, he's sent back to the team hotel and then, I guess, presumably sent back to Memphis at that point. Now, why? Why, when a deal wasn't imminent, did that happen? Was a deal close and then it fell through? Were they just being extra cautious? Did they just come to the realization that it happened? I don't know, but it did affect the team. I know there were certain players that shall remain nameless who were unhappy with the way that that went down because of the way that it kind of affected the team and just felt like kind of, you know, jerking the thing around a little bit. And it just does. It just, again, it's indicative of kind of what appears to be a little bit of a slapdash process or something that's not fully planned out. There was no reason for Tyreek to get on that plane. I mean, there's no reason for it. You didn't need him to play. You didn't want him to play. You don't want to win those games. They almost won them anyway. You don't want to even take that chance. So why is he getting on that plane to begin with if you know you're going to trade him? You got now less than a week out, 3 days really, for the trade deadline. You are trying frantically to trade him. You don't want to play him. The same urgency was there at that point. So why did they do it like that? It was a very strange turn of events, and not one that I think looked real good for the Grizzlies franchise. Didn't make them look like they've really got it all together. Now, that said, the actual situation itself with Tyreek, I suspect, based on what we've seen, you know, in this trade deadline thus far, that all the talk that we've had on this podcast, all the talk that has been surrounding the Grizzlies and surrounding the league about Tyreek Evans, I think it really all comes down to a much simpler explanation. I know that there are people out there. I saw our guest, sometime guest Matt Herdlicka, who is a very, very smart, cap-oriented Grizzly fan and a good writer, who wrote about a number of different possibilities as to why the Tyreek Evans deal has not gone down yet. I know there are others who have theorized different sorts of things. I think everybody is maybe overthinking it just a little bit. To me, it's very simple. The Grizzlies really want a first-round pick for Tyreek Evans. They don't want to take on a whole bunch of extra stuff in the process, salary that they consider to be unnecessary, or, you know, not attached to a player that they value. So if they don't want to do that, then they're trying to wait for that market to be out there for Tyreek Evans. But as we've talked about before, I don't think that market's there. It seems so simple, doesn't it? You look at Tyreek Evans' numbers. You look at the teams that are out there who have been mentioned as potential suitors for Tyreek Evans, whether that's Philly, whether that's Milwaukee, whether that's one of these Eastern Conference teams, Boston, we can go up and down the list. It seems like it should be a no-brainer. You look at Tyreek's numbers. We've talked about how good he has been. We've talked about how good his numbers are. I mean, even, you know, not just the traditional numbers, but his advanced numbers have been good. I mean, he's been so much better than anyone else on the Grizzlies in terms of net rating. It's not even funny. Since January 1st, for example, he is almost a plus 10 by himself, and the Grizzlies as a team are a minus 2.7. This is all points per 100 possessions. So you're talking about one guy who is 12 points better than everybody else. That's almost unheard of in terms of how good he is and how much better he is than everybody else. That level of, like, you know, he's on a different level. So, you know, when you think about that and you think about the fact that he's eighth in the league in pick and roll percentage among players with at least 200 possessions. So these are players that have, you know, quite a few pick and roll possessions this year. These tend to be primary ball handlers, guys that really get a major focus of the offense. Among those guys, he's eighth, and the seven guys in front of him are pretty much all-stars. You know, your Steph Currys of the world. He's been really good. So you look at all that and you're like, well, come on, man. It's a no-brainer. Of course it's easy to move this guy for a first-round pick. Are you kidding me? Well, here's the problem. We all know about the contract stuff. That doesn't help. The fact that you would have a very difficult time re-signing him. You wouldn't really have any built-in advantage in terms of getting Tyreek Evans. You don't have bird rights. Don't even really have early bird rights on Tyreek Evans. So it's extremely difficult if you don't plan on, you know, plunking down your full mid-level, which, you know, a lot of teams may not have or may not want to use because of tax implications, you know, and you're not going to have a built-in advantage necessarily with the guy. So it's that part makes it a tough sell. Also, if you look around the league, you look at the money that's out there, free agency, very tight. This coming free agent class is not looking at a tremendous amount of money. Teams that are perhaps going to be looking at spending that money on either potential restricted free agents or other free agents that are out there are a little loath to bring on guys that they would then feel some obligation to really hang on to And Tyreek is young enough, and the fan base, you would think, would be expecting that Tyreek would return for those teams. Those teams are going to be a little bit reluctant to push the boat out real far to go get Tyreek. All of this kind of lends you to start thinking of, well, what is the market really? Are you going to be able to get that first round pick? And I think the answer right now is no. I would think, and this is where the Grizzlies would, you know, want to hang on as long as they possibly can. You know, they have time, obviously, right up until the deadline. I thought perhaps with Milwaukee losing Malcolm Brogdon for the better part of 2 months with that quad injury that he suffered last week, maybe that would push them to be a little more aggressive in their pursuit, but it does not appear that that is the case based on the reporting out of Milwaukee. So you can consider them not especially aggressive. Boston, by all accounts, does not want to give up a first-round pick, and they have plenty of first-round picks, but they don't want to give up their first-round pick for Tyreek Evans. All these teams, I think what you're going to see is if the deal is simply structured, Tyreek Evans for a pick, that pick is not going to be a first. It would be Tyreek Evans probably for a couple of second-round picks, maybe even 3 second-round picks, depending on who it is and how many they have and when they're doled out. The Grizzlies, have plenty of second-round picks upcoming. They don't really, I don't think, want a whole bunch this year. They would want them to be spread out into the future, I would imagine, if that is a deal that they would do. But that's kind of what it was with Courtney Lee. And Lee's contract was better. I mean, Tyreek's a better player, certainly on the offensive end by far, than Courtney Lee was. But you get the idea. If the deal is simply structured, Tyreek Evans for pick, then that pick is not going to be a first in my mind. I don't think that deal is out there for like an expiring whatever. Boston was talked about possibly in the mix because they had that disabled player exception that they had acquired from the NBA based on Gordon Hayward's injury. That went up to $8.4 million. But that can only be used on one player. No matter how much of it they use, you can only use it on one player. You can't split it up and use it on multiple players. So when they acquired Greg Monroe last week after he negotiated a buyout with the Suns, once they got Monroe, then that took them out of the possibility of using that to bring in Tyreek Evans in a trade. I know that was something that the Grizzlies would have been very interested in getting rid of Tyreek and just having no salary come back at all. That would have been something they really would have liked, but unfortunately for them, that was not the way that it could be structured after Boston made that move to go get Monroe. So, not to say the Boston isn't still a potential candidate, but again, you're going to have to take something else back. This is why when we went through those Tyreek deals a couple weeks back, I was just working under the assumption that you're going to have other parts of the deal. That from the Grizzlies' perspective, you're going to have to throw in other players in order to make the deal bigger. And in all likelihood, if you're the Grizzlies, you're going to have to take on some kind of salary for next year in order to make the deal happen. If you really want that first. Because a first for Tyreek, just by itself, there just aren't very many of those deals on the horizon this year in the NBA. The one team that might be tempted to do it would be Washington, but remember, they've already done that a couple times. They've got major tax implications coming up. They're probably not going to want to just go ahead and blow another first-round pick on a very similar deal to the ones that they've done in years past, even with John Wall's situation being what it is, because they've actually played better, maybe, in spurts without Wall. You would have thought that maybe would have motivated them, but I don't think that's going to be the case. So if you want to structure the deal and take some money back, maybe you could talk about it. But if it's just going to be strictly a couple of expiring contracts, for Tyreek Evans, again, I don't think that's something that they're going to be interested in terms of giving up that first. It just, you know, nowadays, that's a hard market to deal with. Look at, for example, what happened last week when all was said and done, and the Pelicans and the Bulls ended up doing this Mirotić deal. I mean, yeah, the Bulls gave up Mirotić, and they ended up getting a first-round pick, but they also had to take on Omer Asik's deal, too. Quite a bit of money. You know, you're talking about an extra, I think they're on the hook for $20 million or so of that contract in terms of guaranteed money. Had to take that money on. NBA teams typically nowadays, I think the cost to unload a first is something like $15 or $20 million in salary. That's kind of your back of the napkin sort of math on what you would be willing and what you have to absorb in order to do that. You just don't get that first round pick. Teams just, the GMs now are not what they were even 5 years ago. Certainly not what they were 15 or 20 years ago. They don't give up those first round picks that easily. So I would assume that maybe Chris Wallace and everyone else associated with the Grizzlies, they've been calling around, beating the bushes, getting the phone lines, all that stuff. Come on, man, let's go. Let's get Tyreek for the first. But I just don't think that deal's out there. I think if that deal was out there, it would have already been done. Tyreek would have already been on that other team, and the Grizzlies would have turned the page. That isn't out there. So now the question then becomes, what are the Grizzlies going to do? Now, I know what I would do, but, you know, it's not my money. There's also the matter of ownership and the question of ownership, you know, who's going to actually own this team as kind of a complicating factor in this whole thing too. So that's like an extra little bit of, I don't know, you want to call that a complicating factor, you want to call that a barricade, you want to just call that maybe an extra cook in the kitchen, whatever it is, it's definitely something. Because if the Grizzlies are dealing with this, and you're thinking about it, you know, because you think about, like, you know, what would make the most sense? Well, logically, if you get that first-round pick, to me, it's worth whatever, you know, extra little bit of money here and there. It's worth it because you have a shot at a good young player, which is something the Grizzlies certainly need. But again, it's not about money. There also may be some provisions that are out there in terms of this buy-sell, which the Grizzlies are in the middle of, that may prevent them from adding extra money. It may motivate them to simplify the books. It may keep them from adding extra salary on. That may be part of the deal too. So maybe they have some limitations there. I don't know. Again, that's very speculative on my part, but it certainly doesn't help the process when, at least in the back of your mind, you have to be thinking that there is at least a good chance that someone else could own the team when all's said and done. Now, again, day to day, does that affect it? I don't know. But is there a strict mandate? Again, I don't know. But it's at least something that's out there. So you add that to the mix of this whole deal. And it comes down to how much are the Grizzlies willing to accept in order to get that first round pick? If the answer is not very much, then I don't think they're getting the pick. You know, they're going to have to be willing to accept something. The hope in my mind is that the Grizzlies can find a deal where a team like Denver, for example, is really motivated to part with some of their young players, and you can get young players who have worn out their welcome or who were drafted by different GM or different coach or whatever, just aren't part of the plan, you know, like a Emmanuel Mudiay or even Malik Beasley, although he's been, you know, somewhat part of things in Denver. But, you know, to find a team that maybe has, you know, a situation like that, and you could trade and get those guys in lieu of that first round pick, that you could probably do and not take on a whole bunch of money. But I don't think you're getting that first free and clear. I don't think you're getting that first without having to pay a little bit of a price for it. Keep an eye on that. I would imagine tomorrow the the real serious rumor and movement will start. Once this weekend, teams typically hold off around the Super Bowl. Everyone's kind of watching the Super Bowl, doing their thing. And then once that kind of happens, you know, and everyone gears up and now you're ready to go, week of trade deadline, everyone back to work today, I would guess that you would start to hear some serious stuff today and at least one or two moves actually made. Don't know about Tyreek. It certainly could be imminent, but I think they're going to have to figure out what they really want and what they're willing to accept and what kind of a negative side of it they're really willing to accept in order to get a first-round pick from anybody for Tyreek. On the court, the Grizzlies lose Sunday afternoon, morning, whatever, to Toronto in a game that really was played way too early. I'm not a fan. I know in the playoffs these things happen, and teams that are on national TV more often than the Grizzlies, which is pretty much everybody, occasionally will play that noon tip-off or 11 a.m. tip-off, and that happens. But to me, that's not NBA basketball. It's too early for NBA basketball, man. I can't be eating brunch and watching NBA. I can't be, sipping on my morning coffee and getting ready to tip things off. Not my thing. And that Toronto crowd, I give them great credit, man. That Toronto crowd is into it. They're fired up. They were there. That's a good team. Good franchise. Masai Ujiri's done a really nice job with it. Dwayne Casey is a perennially underappreciated coach who has really forged a nice relationship with those guys. They play very hard. I think they're very good and could certainly give Celtics, Cavs, anybody a run for their money if it weren't for the fact that Toronto and Kyle Lowry in particular tend to suck in the postseason. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully that won't happen this year because I like a lot of those guys and I hope they do well. But anyway, they happen to have a great bench. They are one of the few teams in the league. You go up and down and you look at their on-off stuff and the team is positive. They're a positive no matter who is off the floor. You go up and down and you find player X off the floor. How does the team do? They're all positive. Nobody is so vital to that team that when they're off the floor, the team just collapses. Not even Lowry, DeRozan, whoever. Not the case. They got a great bench, very balanced group, and you could tell. And they turned it on the fourth quarter, and the Grizzlies just flat turned it off. If the Raptors had hit anything approaching normal threes, this game would have been 25 points easily. Because the Raptors were just brutal from behind the three-point line. 6 of 35, that is 17%. They were 35 of 54 inside the arc. 35 of 54 inside the arc. That's ridiculously good. Not great from a defensive standpoint for the Grizzlies. But they were so bad behind the three-point line that it gave the Grizzlies an opportunity to at least hang in the game for a while. And the Grizzlies, man, look, clearly talent-wise, far, far below par. Not going to – he's got a bunch of rookies and cast-offs and Mario Chalmers and, guys that just aren't that great for varying reasons. But, man, they play hard. They do play hard. They do play with – intensity. They do seem to be trying their absolute best out there. Marc Gasol is not having a great year. He's not having a great year offensively, not having a great year defensively. He's well, to me, below his par. But I do think he is trying to be positive. I do think he's trying to be something of a mentor to those guys out there, so that's good. I think you're seeing some positive things from Dylan Brooks, Jarrell Martin, Ivan Rabb on the offensive end. I think, there are a lot of things you can take from these games and enjoy watching. And it's fun to see them. And I think it's kind of fun this year, unlike years past, where it's been pretty well settled. You know what you're getting from the Grizzlies. And, those years are fun because of the changeup the Grizzlies could be and the grit and grind and the whole thing. I mean, that was a lot more fun to watch wins than losses. But to me, there's something of a liberating joy is maybe too strong. But, you know, pleasure, I guess is the right word, in watching the young guys go out there and just kind of do their thing without fear. And they make a lot of mistakes, turn the ball over a lot, make a lot of dumb plays. But they play really hard, and they make some good plays. And that's it's kind of interesting to watch them flounder around and do that. You just haven't had much of a chance to do that of late. You know, it's been these playoff runs and squeezing every last win and going for a lot of veterans. Haven't seen too many young players excel. So it's a chance to see some young players do their thing, and that's pretty neat. Obviously, the Grizzlies still are a team that is, you know, it would be the equivalent to me of, like, you know, it's a bunch of dimes and nickels, and, you know, when you're trying to add up to a dollar and you've only got five pieces to do it, dimes and nickels aren't gonna get there. Dimes and nickels are useful, but you need quarters. And if you can get a half dollar, then that makes things a whole lot easier. Grizzlies don't have anything close to that. They might have a couple dimes. They seem to have a whole lot of nickels. Now, that's better than before when they had a whole bunch of pennies. But they, you know, this is where those drafts come into play. You need to draft the quarters. You're not typically going to get those guys in free agency or anywhere else. And that's the crux of the tank argument right there. If you can get a quarter in the draft, then those dimes and nickels start to make a little more sense building around the quarters. You need, but you need two or three quarters if you're going to start really seriously considering a championship type run, because that's the only way, in my mind, that you actually get there. But it's been fun to see what these guys can do, and we'll continue to watch that big game, of course, tomorrow in the Tank World. Huge game. The Grizzlies still haven't beaten an Eastern Conference team on the road, and if they can continue that streak in Atlanta, boy, big, big for the Tank, because the Hawks are playing surprisingly well with a stunning win in New York on Sunday to really help the Grizzlies out and do a solid. We've seen Lakers get some wins of late. You've seen Mavs get a win. Got, you know, several tanking teams playing each other, which means one of them is going to have to win. So the Grizzlies are right there in the mix, 2.5 back of the worst record in basketball. But there are 8 teams within 2.5 games. So this is going to be a very tight tanking battle for the next 2 months. Definitely worth watching. And remember, we'll go into it in more detail, you know, later on as we approach the draft, but every little bit helps. The Grizzlies right now have about a 19% chance of getting one of the top 3 picks in the draft, and only about a 6% chance of getting the top pick in the draft. But if you can get up into that worst spot, all of a sudden you have a 55% chance of getting in the top 3, and about a 21% chance of getting that number 1 pick. Much, much better. Much better. That's the motivation. You can't guarantee it. It's ping pong balls, but remember, this is the last year when it's that traditional, only the top 3 being done by lottery and the odds being a little more weighted towards the top. Next year, you have the top 4, odds much more spread out, which it changes the calibration a little bit in terms of what you need to do tank-wise. So this is the last year of the traditional system of the ping pong balls. We'll see. We'll talk about that matchup and more tomorrow. Maybe talk about a Tyreek trade. This. I asked a question on Twitter. Let me go ahead and answer it for you. The question was, can you give me the 2 Grizzlies, the only 2 Grizzlies that have had a positive net rating since January 1st, who were not named Tyreek Evans? Tyreek, as I mentioned earlier, well and truly off the charts, way ahead of everybody else. But there are 2 who have had a positive net rating since then. Interestingly, the answer, Jarrell Martin and Mario Chalmers. I'll pause for your head to be put back together after it exploded from shock, I'm sure. Jarrell Martin, Mario Chalmers. Jarrell, excellent offensive player, the best offensive player the Grizzlies have had, apart from Tyreke Evans. Not so good defensively, but pretty darn good offensively. Mario Chalmers has been very good defensively, not so good offensively, but both still have a positive net rating, just over 1 point per 100 possessions. On the positive side, nobody else is on the positive side. So congratulations to those two guys, and congratulations to anybody who got that right. And I'm still checking through, because you guys haven't had a chance to hear this yet. So I'm still checking through all of my answers, and I have not seen anyone that has gotten this thing right so far. So we will we'll see if anyone can get it before they get to this part of the podcast. But congratulations if you did. I'm very, very impressed. I don't think very many will be able to say that they've gotten that one right. Let me know what you think. If you have questions, I'll answer a question or two coming up later on this week. I've gotten some good ones, so appreciate that. You can email me, pedmiston@gmail.com, pedmiston@gmail.com, or give me a question right there on Twitter, @PeterEdmiston. Love to hear from all of you. Thanks so much for all of the great listening. Thanks so much for checking out Locked On Grizzlies and the Locked On Podcast Network. You can do it on Spotify now. You can do it wherever you get your podcasts. Big ups to also our friends over at Locked On Celtics, who interviewed Brad Stevens. A nice interview across the network. Go check them out, too, if you get the opportunity. Doing big things on the Locked On Network on the NBA and NFL side, so you definitely want to check all of that out. We are well past 2 million listens across the entire network and continue to grow. Thanks again for listening. Check out Locked On Grizzlies all week as we build up to the trade deadline. Until then, have a great Monday, everybody.